God. Now, 2 weeks ago, we preached and talked about how a letter that Paul wrote reminds us not ever to be so sure that we know the full story that we're seeing in the world around us, not ever to be too sure of the narrative we've set in our mind of how we behave and others behave. Last week, when we talked about the book of Numbers and Moses, we were reminded of the way God sent venomous snakes among the people to personify, to give physical form to all of the doubts and shames and fears that poison people's minds against one another and against God, and how you can remove the powers of those shames and those fears by lifting them up, defanging them, taking the venom away, looking at them in the face, and seeing that they have no power over you. So today we're going to talk a little bit about how to put those things together and what that means for our actions, and see if Dumbledore and Severus Snape have anything to inform us. Please pray with me. Gracious God, may the words of my mouth and the meditations of all our hearts be always acceptable in thy sight, our rock and our redeemer. Amen. So when I read Hebrews and I come across the name Melchizedek, I think of things like fantasy writing. I think of Harry Potter, actually. Are you familiar with Harry Potter? Have you maybe heard of that series of books? They sold one or two copies. And I will admit that part of the reason I was thinking about Harry Potter was after talking about George R.R. Martin in Game of Thrones 2 weeks ago and bringing up Terry Pratchett last week, I said, well, let's back into a sermon series and fantasy month at Ankeny UCC. So here we are. But in this case, there's a really good reason for it, which is it's easy to forget that Joe Rowling, the writer of Harry Potter, and as you recall, Terry Pratchett was the second best-selling British author. Joe Rowling is, unsurprisingly, the top-selling British author. I think pretty much the top-selling individual author of all time. And so we forget that she was a classics major. And so we see all these funny words in Harry Potter, like talking about Albus Dumbledore. So the name is funny, but then you hear he's chief mugwump of the International Wizard Gamut. Right? Funny words. But all of these have their roots in Latin. And if you do a little bit of etymology, they make a little bit more sense. And so when I stumble across Melchizedek, I wonder if the author of Hebrews was not a little bit like J.K. Rowling. And so in this case, indeed, it is there that there is this Melchizedek character. And given the way the author of Hebrews writes it, you might think this character was really important in the Old Testament. Have any of you heard of Melchizedek the priest? I was talking with a couple of other minister friends of mine, and we were all like, I know I've heard him before. Is he in Exodus? Is he in Numbers? The answer is no. Melchizedek shows up in Genesis. I think Genesis 12 or something, which is sort of really close to the beginning of the Bible, but in that bit of the Bible that you sometimes skim over and lose track of the narrative. He, in fact, is a minor character that shows up. Later Abraham, early in his journey, spends a night in his house. Melchizedek is described as the king of Salem and the high priest of El Elyon, God Most High. Whether that is the God that we are worshiping or not is left ambiguous. We are not meant to think so, but it's possible that he was. He then shows up in a psalm. And that's it. That's the entire story. Abram shows up in his house, pays him tribute, and then goes away. Melchizedek disappears. So why on earth is this guy, given that we have a billion named high priests in Israel, the one that the author of Hebrews writes out. Does anyone know? Can anyone guess? Aha, this is why I went to divinity school. Where I can learn to read commentaries like the best of them and see, oh, that makes sense. We don't know. There could be some tradition of Melchizedek that never got written down. But what a lot of people think, and what sure makes sense to me, is that it turns out Salem uses the same Hebrew consonants as the word shalom, How many of you have heard that word? What does it mean? Peace. It is a feature of Hebrew that the consonants are very important because you are meant to sort of infer the vowels. Does that make sense? They don't actually write out the vowels. And so it's easy if you just have the consonants to guess wrong. And so perhaps the author of Hebrews guessed wrong and thought this minister of Salem was actually, or priest, king of Salem was a king of Shalom, of peace. Does that make some more sense why we might have Jesus in the order of this high priest? Is there a name involving peace we sometimes call Jesus? Prince of Peace. And the other thing I'm not even going to try to test you on, which is this. The end of Melchizedek's name is Zadok, right? That turns out to be the Hebrew word for righteousness. In the case of his name, that's not what it means. But if you read it, it might be. So we look at Hebrews, the author of Hebrews, who says, I think some little etymology, we can use this fancy name to remind us that Jesus is a high priest in the line of peace and righteousness. Right? Isn't that something we would all like to be in our lines? Keep that in mind, because we're going to shift gears again and go back to Dumbledore and Severus Snape. Okay, so in this book, Harry Potter, for those of you who may not be broadly familiar with this plot, there's a boy. He is marked early on as an enemy of evil, and his mother's love saves his life. So he, representing love, is fighting against evil. Are you tracking? Does this sound familiar? Have you heard that story before, broadly speaking? Where have you heard that story before? What's the name we love to hear? Jesus, thank you. Someone follows the hymns. Okay. So we have this character who is fighting evil with love. And in this passage in Hebrews, the thing that's pulled out about Jesus is that he was marked by God. Jesus was marked by God to be this transformative messenger, to be the high priest of love and righteousness. Which is why I think, even though Harry Potter is not a Christian allegory by intent, we have things to learn from it. You know, it is hard to avoid the fact that we are in Western Europe and in the United States. We have Christianity all around us and these themes. And one of them is also forgiveness. Because what we have with Dumbledore, who is the White Knight hero in Harry Potter. He is the old man. He is the chief priest. He is the chief wizard. Not the chief priest, the chief wizard. He is the headmaster of the wizarding school, Hogwarts. He is the sign of all good and the great antagonist to Dumbledore, or to Voldemort, the evil wizard. He also, it is said, has one fault, which is that he is too forgiving. He is too quick to forgive people who transgress against him. His heart is too big, and this leads him to make mistakes and trust the wrong people. And Exhibit A is Severus Snape. What a great name, Severus Snape. Makes you think of the snakes from last week, right? Because Snape hates Harry Potter. It is clear from the first time they meet, he will be a thorn in Harry Potter's side. Snape was a follower of the dark wizard Voldemort before he had a last-minute recantation. Said, no, no, no. I swear I'm coming over to the side of good, but all the people that he opposed remembered he'd always loved the dark arts. He'd always opposed the people who were fighting Voldemort. He was always a little suspicious. So they did not think that his last second recanting of his ways was true. Dumbledore had forgiven him too easily. Then we find out in the end of the first book that while Snape does hate Harry Potter, he's also trying to protect Harry Potter and keep him from being killed by Voldemort. And we're all a little confused. It's clear he hates Potter. Why is he nonetheless trying to save him? We're giving something of an unsatisfactory answer. And because we know he has transgressed, we are deeply suspicious of him. And the reaction that people have to him and to Dumbledore is one we've seen before. You forgive too easily. Ever heard that? Okay, good. If you've not ever heard that, try harder. Okay. They're making a fool out of you. Heard that one? Yeah? You can't trust them. You shouldn't even be talking to them. Are these things we've heard? Because when, as last week we talked about, people lift up their shames for all to see, how do we sometimes react? Do we run up and give them a hug? Do we maybe turn our back, walk away, or inch away? Do we sometimes get really angry with them? I mean, imagine something like, I'm coming to you to say, we used to have money in the bank account and now we don't. Is your first thought love and forgiveness? No. With these transgressions, we have natural feelings, and part of the reason we have them is we have a sense of brokenness in ourselves, right? That if you can screw up that badly, maybe I can screw up that badly. So we react in ways like turning our backs, like running away, like shunning, like running people down, leaving the church, all these things that we do in order to avoid having that transgression in our face, in order to build a barrier between us and someone else as a shield against the wrong they have done, lest we find out that we can have that weakness too. And so in the case of Severus Snape, why wouldn't you want to have him around? It's that message that anyone can succumb to darkness, right? Anyone can be this evil person. It could happen to any of us. And so it's best to keep them out of sight, out of mind. Leave them out in the cold. Leave them starving. That's what they deserve. But Dumbledore doesn't think so. And so Dumbledore accepts Snape's recanting. Now, this does not mean that Dumbledore forgets what Snape has done. It is clear in the books that Dumbledore keeps what we call in the church good boundaries with Severus Snape. He knows that Severus Snape loves the dark arts. So what he does is make sure Snape never teaches defense against the dark arts, lest he be tempted to go down that path again. Good boundaries. So Dumbledore forgives him, but does not forget the transgression. So as someone lifts up their shame to you and says, I have done wrong, forgiving, which is a long process, does not necessarily involve forgetting. Oh, you stole all the money out of the bank account. Okay, that's a problem. We're going to work on how to fix that problem. Even after we have fixed that problem, you're not going to get access to the bank account again. Right? Are you tracking? Okay, so here is the story that we have. You set up good boundaries. You let them in, though. You forgive. As someone lifts up their shames to you, you start that process of forgiveness. Because what we find in Harry Potter is that Severus Snape does not immediately become a good person or a likable person when it comes to Dumbledore. But what we also learn is that that moment of Dumbledore's forgiveness is the beginning of a long path of healing for Severus Snape. And for us, as we feel shame, and we feel guilt, and we feel fear that tempts us to speak out against ourselves and doubt in our God, when we admit it, when we hold these things up and try to take the power out of them, it is not like in the story of Numbers from last week that we are instantly healed. It is the start of a path to healing. That takes a very long time. Very long time. But the healing is between us, between one another. Because what we learned in Hebrews is that we are all called upon to do work for God. Jesus had a particular mission. We have a different mission in our lives. Our mission is to bring about the kingdom of peace on earth. To build the kingdom. That is what we are called to do in this church. Just like Harry Potter was called to live a life of love and win for love and not run away from it. And that process is long and hard. And sometimes it will make us suffer. Hopefully not physically, but sometimes. And so we look around and say, how do we start the path to forgiveness and reconciliation? And it starts when someone reveals a shame to you. To start by saying, okay, this is a good start. I may not be really pleased right now, but maybe we can work together to make life better. That is the work of the kingdom of God, to work toward forgiveness and reconciliation all the days of our life.